Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Planet Zorg. And I am Logan, and I am joined once again by Zorg, the mighty conqueror of the puny planet, also known as Earth. What's up?
Hey, what's up, homie?
How's everything?
Oh, well, pretty good with me anyway.
Somebody lose a cat?
Somebody lose a cat?
I saw on your Facebook like you had posted a lost cat thing.
I do that actually from time to time. I like, you know, I'm kind of involved in animal rescue, like peripherally.
Because I know you recently got yourself a cat, or do you have, how many cats do you have? One?
I have a cat. She's a little gray cat.
Yeah. And you have, I noticed that the cat was sick for a while, but then it got better, or what happened?
Well, when we first got her from the ACC shelter, that's the city shelter, she had a really, really bad cold, which apparently all the felines that go in there get. And she was really skinny, and you know, she was... not really in super good shape when we first brought her home. She dealt with it really well. I mean, she was in good spirits, but she kind of, you know, just kept to herself, and she would sort of just kind of huddle on the bed. And she also liked the laundry hamper, and there's also like kind of a hiding space inside my couch that she liked at the time. So we didn't really see a whole lot of her. And I used, what did I use for her? I used, like, Nasonex or something, which some, like, over-the-counter product, they just tell you to put, like, a couple drops on your fingers and rub it on the cat's nostrils, and it'll just, it's not going to fix anything, but it'll make her feel a little better. And I used that, and, you know, the first few days, she didn't, like, use her litter box, and she wasn't eating, and we were a little concerned after, like, 3 days. But then she started, you know, like doing both enthusiastically. Once she got over the cold, she was fine.
Good. So how old is the cat now?
Well, she's about 3.5 years old. She was 3 when we got her. Yeah.
So,
you've probably seen pictures of her.
I have. She's cute, yeah. And
yeah,
she's your first cat in a while, huh?
Yeah, I had a cat many years ago. He died, and I was, like, you know, kind of scared to get another cat. But we got her, and you know, I love her. She's really cool.
So are you living with somebody right now?
No, we maintain separate apartments, but, you know, we're together a bit.
I see. So it's kind of like your guys' cat. I see. So but it stays at your house.
Yes.
All right. Well, and we can get off. So in general, like, what's your view of dogs?
I like dogs. I think that they're very nice creatures.
Okay. But you never thought about getting one of them?
You know, if we lived out in the middle of bumfuck or had a place out there, it would be nice to have a dog. I think most dogs are being done a disservice living in New York apartments. Obviously, if you have a little lap dog, that's a much different issue. And I don't know how well Lulu would take to having a dog in the apartment. But dogs are a little bit more high maintenance. You know, a cat, you feed her, you water her, you pet her, you make sure that she's got clean litter, and you know, you talk to her when she talks to you, because this one's really talkative. But dogs, you got to walk them generally, you know.
That cat looked like a little bit Siamese.
A lot of people have commented on that, and she does have the flat nose sort of from the side that's characteristic of Siamese, and she is very talkative, which is characteristic of Siamese. So I think she's part Siamese. I'm pretty sure she is.
Yeah, she definitely has some. And
she's very talkative. I mean, if she has a problem, she'll tell you about it.
Now, let's get back to, we were talking last time about all this political stuff. We see that the everything kind of settled out, but they're going to have another fight. Do you think they're going to shut down the government again?
In January?
Yeah.
I doubt it. I think I doubt it. I think that both sides would have a little too much to lose this time around.
I see, but I mean, there's going to be a fight for it.
Well,
I mean,
yeah. I mean, Harry Reid has said that there's not going to be like an easy way out. But I and so is Paul Ryan. But I think that it probably won't be as difficult as the last time around. I think that they'll make some concessions. It's just the big issues are taxes and spending and entitlements, and basically the Senate, which is controlled by Democrats, as most of us know, wants to raise taxes, which the House, which is mostly controlled by Republicans, as most of us know, is saying, wait a minute, we already cut a deal to raise taxes over the next 10 years. We're not going to, like, bend on this. So
was that really a deal? Because it's like...
It was really a deal. It was $600 billion over 10 years.
Yeah, but couldn't they have just let the Bush tax cuts expire and then it would have been even more?
Yes, but the feeling at the time was that if they just let the Bush tax cuts expire, that it would hurt the common Joe too much. Now,
right.
here's where it gets a little tricky. It did hurt the common Joe because what they didn't do was they didn't extend the payroll tax break.
Right.
So everybody that next week got an unpleasant surprise in their paycheck, and people were going, what the fuck? What? Why am I getting less money? What the hell? I thought this tax was just supposed to affect the evil wealthy people. I'm a benevolent working class person.
Well, you know, pushed to have those things back in is the Republicans. So, I mean, they wanted that tax back. They fought
no.
for that.
No.
Yes, they did.
No, it was a concession that they made to get the income bracket on whom the major taxes would be imposed raised from $200,000 to $450,000.
Well,
so
in
no,
any case,
to say that they wanted it is kind of an untruth. I'll just say it's inaccurate. To say that they conceded to it, it is probably a little more accurate.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll see about that one. But I my understanding was they wanted that back in. They didn't really care about...
Well, there's lots of understandings that are really misunderstandings. I mean, if you listen to the average person commenting, which they have no fucking business doing, on the last government debacle, they'll tell you that the reason that the government got shut down was because the evil Republicans wanted to defund Obamacare, and the benevolent Democrats stood up for everyone. In fact, the Obamacare thing was off the table after the first iteration of the CR, and we all know this. Well, you and I know this.
Right. What they wanted was to go to conference when they refused to do it for 6 months. But I understand.
What I'm saying is people's perceptions of this issue are extremely media-driven, and they don't really bother even anymore to read the actual articles. Like, you see an article on, let's say, MSNBC, which is like a very partisan network, or Fox, which is also going in the other direction. And you read a headline, and then you make an assumption based on the headline. But headlines are done to get people to read articles, which they no longer do anymore. So if you read the actual article quite often, you'll find that the headline doesn't portray the gist of the article accurately. So you wind up thinking that something has happened or is happening that has in fact not happened or is in fact not happening. Not you specifically, one.
Let me ask you a broad question, though, because to me, I don't think there's been one policy proposal since the Barack Obama presidency that the GOP has put forward.
Okay, wait, hold on. Let's just cut to the chase and sum up your feelings on this. The GOP, they're obstructionist and evil, am I correct?
No, I'm asking
what proposal they have made since he's been president that is, that helps the economy? It seems like their austerity is hurting it. So anything that they want to do is...
What's their austerity? Define that. Do you mean the sequester?
Yes. The sequester.
You mean the sequester that Jay Carney said himself was Barack Obama's idea?
The idea of the sequester was to come to get people to come to the table and make this.
No. That's after the fact bullshit. Barack Obama was the one who proposed the sequester, according to Barack Obama.
He proposed it as a hammer to make them come to the table. I mean, that's
okay,
what
cool.
he said.
Okay, cool. All right. Okay, fine. Let's say that he did. What harm has the sequester done?
It's slowed down the economy.
Really? How?
There's
how?
All kinds of economic forecasts of what it's done.
All kinds. What? No. I'm sorry. What kind?
Okay, you're going to deny that it slows down the economy, then we can just move on from this.
All kinds.
If you're going to deny the fact that the sequester was bad for the economy, there's nothing else to talk about. I mean, okay, fine. You say it's good for the economy?
I'm saying that it's neither good nor bad. The sequester affects discretionary spending only. Did you know that?
Yes, but it's still money put into the economy that slows it down. I mean, it's money that doesn't go into the economy that slows it down. I mean,
well, gosh, that's part of our evil system of checks and balances. Gee, we should get rid of that.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that the Republicans seem to be determined on slowing down the economic growth.
Why didn't the benevolent Democrats agree to a spending bill?
But the spending bill right now,
the reason that the sequester came into effect was because neither side could agree on a proper budget.
Right.
What you're saying is that because neither side in our system of checks and balances could agree on a budget and something happened that you disagree with, that the Republicans are evil and obstructionist. Okay,
so
cool.
You're saying that the Obama deal that he gave, which was basically chain CPI and all kinds of cuts to Medicare and Social Security, for a small tax increase was a bad deal. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that there was room for negotiation.
But that was negotiated. That was a pretty good deal that they could have gotten. I mean, they could have gotten some serious entitlement cuts and then a slight tax increase, and they didn't want it. And they wouldn't give you to it for 10-1. I mean, the Republican presidential candidate said 10-1 no. So who's obstructionist?
Republicans are obstructionist. They're evil. Barack Obama, if they don't go for 10 to 1, then what are they? Barack Obama is, depending on your point of view at the moment, is either very good and wise or completely evil because he's spying on us. Take your pick. I mean, I'm pretty sure that the media is going to go back to the completely evil because he's spying on us now that the whole government funding thing is over. It really seems to be media-driven. There's a schizophrenic view of the government, of both sides of the aisle, that does not even fucking remotely portray reality. It's make up your mind, media, is Barack Obama.
Okay, let's talk about recovery, or is he
evil and manipulative?
Do you believe that what country in history has ever cut its way into prosperity? That's what I want to know.
It wasn't our country during
Reagan, because he spent like a sailor. Bush spent like a sailor.
Reagan's spending wasn't really a whole lot compared to, let's say, George Bush, or certainly not Barack Obama. So
quadrupling the national debt is not a lot of spending?
You mean like Barack Hussein Obama?
Barack Hussein Obama, who's had to keep up two wars that he didn't start, yes. It's like him.
But he likes the Afghan war. Remember, that's his war. He claimed it.
He claimed it after we fucked it up, yeah. But I mean,
wait. And are we in Iraq? I don't think we are. And how did we get out of Iraq? Who pulled us out of Iraq?
I don't know. Who?
That would be George W. Bush. He signed the treaty.
But I mean, look, I'm just saying that the bottom line is the Republicans keep talking about spending. And the thing is, it's so stupid to cut spending when we're in an economic slowdown. I mean, it's just
Okay. I get it. Keynes is a great economist. Is that the gist of your statement?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. He's an asshole. He's stupid.
All right. What country has cut its way to prosperity, my friend? Please just give me an example. I
can some countries that have spent their way to poverty. Let's use Zimbabwe as a fucking example.
Zimbabwe doesn't print their own currency.
What?
Zimbabwe doesn't have its own currency, which is tied to the entire world, which is basically the richest country on earth. So, I mean, I don't think you could really compare Zimbabwe to the United States. But what major country has given, I mean, when you went to this downturn, Germany increased spending. They're doing okay. They're doing much better than we are.
They're not. That's made up. Europe is in serious trouble.
Germany has to keep all the rest of the countries that have.
That's correct. That's correct. The southern countries are essentially leeching off of the northern countries. Is that what you were going to say?
Yes. But, I mean, if you look at.
Why is that?
Because they've been practicing austerity.
No.
And they're spiraling out of control.
That's made up. That's an outright fiction. They're not practicing austerity.
Okay.
That's the problem. Greece, when austerity measures were proposed to them by Germany and France, had riots that have lasted for 3 years now.
But that would have been a stupid policy anyway.
It wouldn't have been a stupid policy. And you know what's going to eventually happen to Greece? They're going to be booted out of the zone. They'll still be in the EU, but they won't be in the Eurozone. Neither will Spain. Either that, or there'll be a euro and a suro, a southern currency and a northern currency, and that will wreck at least half of Europe's economy. The thing about the United States, and hear me out, no matter how – actually, our GDP to debt ratio, for starters, isn't really bad. It's okay.
That's right. So that is serious, but
it's
bullshit, too.
It's actually a little better, I believe, than, let's say, France, who are in, you know, they're in pretty good shape. Now, if France got in trouble, and they're not going to get in trouble for mismanaging their own economy, I don't think, unless something really bad happens there. But if let's say, Greece and Spain drag their asses down, and in an extreme scenario, they have to cut their ties with the Eurozone, they have to just ditch the Euro, what's going to happen to their Euro-denominated debt that they are now going to have to pay in fucking francs? The thing about the United States is we may be in debt, although I would not say that we're like, ooh, this is terrible. Our debt is really, really bad. It's really not.
Well, your party is saying the exact opposite.
You shouldn't do that. That's not okay to do in any kind of debate. Your party, you're this, you that. That's really not okay. And nobody likes
it. The Republican Party is preaching that the debt is a major crisis, and you're saying it's not.
No, the Democratic Party is saying that the debt is a major crisis. The Republicans are saying, well, depending on – okay, first, you just fucking derailed what I was saying. So let's go back to what I was saying.
Go ahead.
Which I forget.
You were talking about Greece and the whole...
No, I was talking about France. No, what I was saying was our debt situation will always be a stable country when it comes to our debt situation. Do you know why?
Why?
Because we pay our debt in what?
Dollars.
Yes. Dollars are a hard currency. Everybody likes them. Everybody likes euros. Now, if the French wind up having to cut from the euro, which is not likely, but Greece is likely to wind up going back to the drachma, are people really going to want to get their fucking debts paid in drachmas or francs? Seriously, France or Germany, actually, the mark was kind of considered a hard currency, but compared to the euro, it's bullshit.
Right.
Nobody wants to get paid in francs or drachmas or pesos. That's like being paid in fucking it's like having somebody pay their debt to you in pennies.
Yeah.
It's bullshit. You know, nobody likes that. Whereas people are like, well, the U.S., they're paying their debt to us in dollars. As to what you were saying, yeah, where there is the matter of what people are like calling going into default, but we actually would not be in default. I think you and I have discussed this before, and we agreed on this. Default, not even technically, default only means that we would not be able to pay even the interest on our debts, which come to about 4% of our national debt. So I don't think we're ever going to be in trouble when it comes to that. We're not going to go into default. That's alarmist talk. If Republicans are saying it, they're being alarmist. If Democrats are saying it, they're being disingenuous. Everybody knows that that's not really the issue. The people who are saying it is are either delusional or they're making it up to scare people.
Well, this is the major tactic that the Republicans have been using to slow down this presidency.
Both sides are using that tactic. You just happen to disagree with the Republicans.
Oh, I disagree with his making the debt the chief problem when unemployment is the chief problem. I mean, to me, that solves all the issues. You solve the unemployment crisis, then you're probably not going to have much debt.
I think that. There are people who would probably disagree with that and tell you that if you get the debt a little more under control, that you'll have more jobs. Now, I'm not an economist and neither are you, so I don't know if we can like really comment super intelligently on this. But I think that we're in an era where traditional means of economic growth just don't really work that well anymore because we're too tied into a global economy. If you look at the financial meltdown of 2008, it's not like, whoa, this happened here, and then just coincidentally it happened there and there and there. It happened everywhere kind of at once because our financial institutions are all tied together. It's not like Chase has Borders or Citibank. I'm using them as examples, even though they profited off of the financial crash of 2008, much to my chagrin, because like I was going along happily as a Washington Mutual customer. You know, my original bank was the Dime. You know the Dime.
Yes.
There's still an original flagship Dime bank in Williamsburg, but the Dime itself. Got eaten by Washington Mutual some years back. So I became a Washington Mutual customer. Mm-hmm. And I was like pretty happy with being a Washington Mutual customer because they maintained all of what I considered to be the positive attributes and policies of the Dime. I had free checking. If I used a foreign ATM, I got the fee kicked back to me, which was very, very cool. I didn't get charged a foreign ATM fee from the bank. All of those.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, flash forward to 2008, like, what was it, September, I guess, when all of this shit happened. People got to put this in perspective. This shit didn't happen until, like, the tail end of 2008. It was, like, literally months before the election. And it took I saw it coming because, well, my profession at the time, which you know, gave me the wherewithal to see it coming. But most people probably did not. I think that you would agree with me on this.
Right.
All of a sudden, it's like, whoa, Lehman Brothers, oh, my God, whoa, you know, and all of these lending institutions are cutting lines of credit, which, and again, correct me if you think I'm wrong, cutting lines of credit isn't exactly a way to further the economy.
No. I mean, but that's the same argument against austerity. I mean,
No. We're not talking about austerity, and austerity is a relative term. But we can get back to that in a moment.
Okay.
I'm just telling my own banking story.
Right. Okay.
So then I find out, oh, hey, Zorg, your bank is having severe problems. And I'm like, oh, that's terrible. And then the next day, like, I get an email that says, oh yeah, by the way, you're now a Chase customer. You're not, you know, welcome to J.P. Morgan Chase. And I'm like, oh, really? Really? Do I have to? And, of course, all those wonderful policies that WaMu had, which, you know, those exist only to make the financial institution a buck. It's not like they do anything or anybody any good outside of that. It's like,
right.
It doesn't harm you, dude, to like, fix my foreign ATM fee. It's just going to get you more customers.
Right.
You know, they're not going to be billionaires. They're going to be people like me. But, you know, it adds up. That's money. You know,
yeah,
that's money.
Absolutely.
And you make. So I wind up with all of my little perks and freebies taken away. And now we have basically two banks. I mean, I know that we also have TD and Bank of America and a few other little tiny banks.
ING,
here.
I heard, is really good.
I'm sorry?
I heard ING.
Oh. ING has a really good reputation. I've never had the pleasure of banking with them. But the fact is they're not ubiquitous like Chase and Citibank are. People now want a bank that has – and we used to have all of these banks everywhere. I remember a friend visiting like 25 years ago and going, wow, you got three banks on every block. And, you know, it was cool because if you banked with, you know, Apple Bank or whatever, you know, there would be an Apple Bank and you go in and no fee, you get your money and walk out. And, you know, now it's like there's TD and they have a few branches here and there. And I understand their customer service is, like, pretty good. There's Bank of America. They've always sucked. There's Chase and there's Citibank. And it's mostly Chase and Citibank. Would you not say this is what you mostly see when you're walking around?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're down to, like, two banks, and one bank, I think, is really trying to, like, take over New York in this bizarre comic book scenario, which, like, I'm going to, like, I don't know if I'll get sued for this if I ever follow through on this, but I was thinking of having like a comic book called New York City, but the New York would be crossed out and City would be CITI.
Oh, well, with all the bikes and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, dude, I mean, is this not outrageous? And I almost got mowed down by a fucking like Greek hipster the other day riding a fucking Citibank. I'm like, wow, you know, I really would just love to beat you with a fucking crowbar, you fucking foreign asshole.
Yeah, I mean, they're all over now, those damn bikes.
And we have Citi Field. I mean, you know, what we used to have Shea Stadium, and they built a new stadium, and everyone's like, oh, this is really wonderful. The Mets have a new stadium, and it's Citi Field. It's named after a bank. And we've gotten to the point where if you look at every other city in their sports region, some financial institution or reinsurance company or some shit like that.
Yeah, they are taking over. Well, okay, but now when you the Republicans, let's face it, they have a keen interest in the economy not recovering under Obama,
first.
That's a fact.
Well, some of them do. This is where I differ with my position, and this is going back several years, and it's too late to do it. But my position was, why not give him what he wants?
And then watch it fail.
Yeah, and then watch it fail. If you're so sure it's going to fail, I mean, make an announcement. Make it public knowledge that you're doing this because you know that his shit's going to fail so that, you know, it can't be pushed back on you later when it fails and, you know, oh, it was the Republicans who passed this. It's like, come out and say, we're gonna go along with this shit. We are positive it's going to fail, and we just want to show everyone that it's going to fail, and that's why we're doing this. And then go along. This was my plan, but, you know.
It's a good plan.
I don't think that people in the Republican Party really listen to me. So.
Yeah, well, I think that they saw the Clinton presidency and they gave him a little bit what he wanted, and the economy did well. So,
the Clinton presidency worked out well because they gave Clinton what he wanted, and he gave them what they wanted. Clinton actually, instead of talking about the opposition party, which we've been doing, let's talk about the guy sitting in the Oval Office. Clinton actually, and I think it was because his philosophy, his economic and political philosophies, were not really fixed. He was one, and this isn't really a negative criticism. He was one of those guys who would like kind of wet his finger and stick it up in the air and go, okay, which way is the wind blowing? And that would be his political philosophy. And it worked out surprisingly well in those two terms that he held, because, well, obviously we wound up, you know, in the black and budgetary surplus, which, you know, wouldn't have happened if there hadn't been a shutdown, well, which lasted like a day. But, you know.
You think it was all the spending cuts? I don't think so. I think it was the tax increase.
It wasn't just the spending cuts. It was the fact that once that happened, Clinton, who had up to that point not really bothered to work with the Congress, decided, you know what, I'm going to work with these guys, and some of their ideas are probably okay, and if not, I can always blame it on them. And Gingrich did the same thing. He's like, you know, we'll work with this guy, and, you know, some of his shit's okay, and if they don't work, you know, we'll blame it on him. And amazingly, pretty much not everything, but most things worked out pretty nicely. This, you know, it's not happening right now. And you can assign blame to the Republicans. I can assign blame to both sides, or a little more to Obama and specifically to Harry Reid. But it doesn't really matter at this point. It's like they're
Obama
they're,
and Harry. Okay, they wanted the littlest tax increase.
I absolutely do not want to hear what Obama inherited, because I will give you a bunch of quotes from the man himself talking about how he would fix everything within 3 years and how he didn't deserve to hold office if he couldn't. And I'll also point out how Ronald Reagan inherited way worse shit, fixed it in 3 years,
and spent like a sailor doing it. But they won't let Obama spend. I mean, come on.
No, dude, come on. He spent.
Tip O'Neill let Reagan spend.
Here's the problem with the stimulus and whatnot. And I was actually kind of a proponent of the stimulus when it was originally proposed.
You mean when it was proposed by Bush, when he did the first stimulus, or when it was done by?
No, I'm talking about Obama. Obama.
Because he did the first one right before he left. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm talking about Obama. The problem that occurred with the stimulus, and this can't be blamed on Obama. This is every fucking congressman and senator getting his little bit of pork in the goddamn bill.
But there's nothing wrong with that. That helps the economy.
Ladders for fish? Come on.
Whatever. Just put people to work. That's it.
No. Come on. You help the economy by building roads and train stations and shit like that. You don't help the economy by building ladders for a rare species of fish.
At the point we were at, you helped the economy by digging ditches and filling them up again. I mean,
that's not how it works. You have to create meaningful jobs.
You certainly shouldn't be cutting federal workers, which is what they did.
The public sector has grown under Obama.
I don't think so. It's grown smaller than any other president, man. That's the fact, dude. They've kept it low.
Except it's bigger now than it's ever been.
But I mean, that's just because we have a bigger population. I mean, so what?
We should not have that large a percentage of our population being federal workers.
Our percentage is lower. Our numbers are higher. So I don't know what you're talking about. Our percentage is lower than it was under any other president. Okay, well, we're going to have to just move on from there, because as far as I know, Obama has the smallest government of all the presidents in the last 50 years.
No, that's completely inaccurate.
As a percentage of GDP, of the population?
No. The public sector, in terms of percentage of the population, is larger than it's ever been. And it's grown significantly under Barack Obama.
No, it hasn't. That's just not true. All right, well, we're just going to have to disagree on that one, man. That's just not true.
The ball started rolling under Clinton. It got massive under Bush, and it increased even more under Obama.
It increased to I mean, his government is smaller than Bush's right
now.
No,
it's not. His government is not smaller than
Bush's. I'm going to find you the figures on that one, man, because I'm not going to back down on that.
But when you find the figures, find them from a non-ideologically biased site, or I will not accept them.
All right, fine.
MSNBC doesn't count. Congressional Budget Office counts.
Okay. The Congressional Budget Office said that Obamacare would save us on the deficit.
I'm not talking
that?
About what they say about Obamacare. That was not the topic of discussion.
So it's only when they agree with you.
No, what I'm saying is topic of discussion was not Obamacare. And actually what the Congressional Budget Office says about Obamacare, if you want to get into it, is that they did a sleight of hand with Medicare, and that's what's causing the seemingly flawless funding over a 10-year projected period. But if you take that out of the equation, it's a cipher. We really, really, really don't know.
We don't also know how much it would cost us in the future to have everyone go to the emergency room.
This is my feeling about not just Obamacare, but about the insurance industry in general, and whether or not people have insurance. I don't really see, like, I don't want to phrase it that way. People pay for other people regardless. That's the point of insurance.
Right.
Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay, that's how insurance works. So we got that covered. The problem that I have with the ACA, and it would be great if it worked, but it's not going to work very well. It's already, like, have you been on the New York Exchange? You have no reason to, but
no.
Okay, I've been on the New York Exchange. I'm an applicant. I'm one of the 470,000 applicants that Sebelius was touting. Now, an applicant, to make it clear to our listeners, isn't someone who has insurance through the ACA exchange. It's someone who has gone through the application process and either been approved or disapproved. Most people get approved. I was approved. So, and this took, like, multiple tries, because I think you know that websites are a little goofy.
Mm-hmm.
You're aware of it.
Yes.
Yeah. So I guess after, like, the fifth try, I actually got to look at plans. And in fairness, what I'll say is if you have a little more money to spend than the cheap level plans, the bronze plans, you can get a plan that isn't terribly onerous. The platinum plans, as plans on the open market go, they're not too bad, but they're too expensive. Most people cannot afford them. I can't afford them. In fact, I can't really afford a bronze plan, and the bronze plans are absolute shit. And we talked about this like a couple weeks ago, and the point that you made was, well, the prices should come down once more and more people sign up for the plan, which I disagree with, but let's say it's true. One of the big problems with the plan is the younger demographic isn't signing up in enough numbers, supposedly. We don't know for sure because Sebelius hasn't released the absolute numbers, but supposedly they're not, which makes sense because the younger demographic can stay on their parent plan now till they're 26. So it's not like they've got this insane incentive to, like, go out and immediately sign up for Obamacare. So we're not seeing, at least as far as we know, and the figures will be out next month, so we'll probably have, like, a better point at that time. We're not really seeing the younger segment of the population, which in theory is the segment of the population that, even though they're probably paying a little less for insurance, they're still kind of subsidizing the people who use insurance more, the young, healthy people. I myself happen to be, like, an old, healthy person. I've had, like, I guess, two major health issues in the last several years, and only one of them was handled through my insurance. The other was like I dealt with via cash. But if you're looking at a lot of people in the baby boomer bracket, they're the people that, again, in theory, the younger demographic is, I don't want to say supporting, but they're like putting money into the system that's really going to be eaten more by the older demographic. And then as they get older, the same thing will happen on and on ad infinitum. But at least as of right now, it's not happening, and we're not seeing prices go down. And I personally have a degree of skepticism as to whether prices will ever go down because, let's be real, I've never seen insurance prices go down.
Well, the trick is for them not to go up anymore than they already are.
But the thing is they have gone up. They've gone up a lot. If you price
right,
plans,
that's it.
Well, maybe.
That'd be like
I'm not going to say awesome. That'd be less than awful. But right now, I can't even afford a bronze plan. I'm just going to take the tax hit, which for the first year is $100. And hopefully, like by this time next year, I'll be in a better position, and we'll see what happens. But I can't be the only person who's in the same boat.
So you're saying that you don't make enough. You make too much to get a subsidy.
I make too much to get a subsidy and not enough to really afford a good plan. And let's make this clear to our listeners. Not every plan costs the same for everybody. I'm not sure if everybody knows this. Like if you get like, you know, plan XYZ, it's going to cost me a different amount than it's going to like cost you, for instance. And it's going to cost somebody who's 15 years younger than you a different amount than what it costs you.
I see. Well, yeah, obviously, because you're a bigger risk.
I'm technically a bigger risk, although I'm not as big a risk as, let's say, somebody who has COPD and who smokes. And I'm not really sure how they deal with prior conditions impacting your premiums. Now,
they jack them up.
I would hope so. I mean,
they do, but I mean, the idea is that it's.
I don't know because I don't have any premium condition or previous conditions, and the only people that I know who do have previous conditions keep on getting booted off the site, so I can't get any anecdotal feedback from them.
Well, the site is a disaster. We can agree on that, but
it's not just one site. It's. I'm willing to overlook the whole site thing. It's not just one site. Like New York has its own site, which is tied into the federal site.
Right.
So it's a conglomeration of sites. But near as I can tell, and people who do this kind of work tell me, it was not super well designed. But I'm not an expert on these things on a national scale, so I don't know what it'll take to like get it actually up and running. But what I suspect is going to happen is there's probably going to be a little bit of a pushback on the deadline for actually signing up, which I think is March right now. I think they're probably going to push that back.
They've said, though, that anybody who's having problems is not going to get penalized. I mean, it's just the way it is. I mean, I know that it's going to be hard to sort out.
The penalties aren't even severe for this year anyway. And I think all you have to do is, like, you know, file for an exemption and just say, dude, blah, 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 blah. And they'll be like, yeah, okay, fine, whatever. Give us $50 and we're square.
Or nothing.
But I think the default is $95. I think that's what the default is for the first year.
And they're not even enforcing it, I heard.
I have no idea because it's not April yet. So we'll find out. I'm going to guess that they're probably going to be a little lax on enforcing it because it's nothing that you really want. I don't think you really want a whole lot of public interest stories on local news channels detailing how this, you know, deaf, blind, and dumb dude named Tommy couldn't get a plan on the ACA because like he couldn't navigate the network, although he plays pinball very well.
Okay, on that note, dude, we're gonna about to end the show. So I'll talk to you soon, man. It's good conversation. I'll text you when the next one is, and we'll put it up on Facebook. So thanks.